Special episode, The World of Cinnabar, Part 1. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today, we're going to be taking a look at some monsters from 1993's The World of Cinnabar, 2nd Edition, by Raven C.S. McCracken. My copy of this game was given to me by a group of friends, including Patreon backer Robert Gordon. Thank you, Robert. And I remember we were all standing around in the gaming store that we all used to go to, and coming up with which characters or incidents from the history of the World of Cinnabar setting would be the best band names. There was already an ongoing bit on our RPGNet, people talking about how one of the items in this game, the Midnight Sunstone Bazooka, would make a great band name. And we had different ones for different genres. So I remember there was the Rebellion of the Drakes. I think that was prog rock. The Purging, that's metal, obviously. And mine was Lord Midnight and the 72-headed Chameleon Hydra, which I envisioned as a big band act. Each head of the Hydra with a different instrument, and there's Lord Midnight in the front in his dinner jacket. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Starlight Ballroom. I'm Lord Midnight, and this is the 72-headed Chameleon Hydra. Hit it, boys. Anyway, the point is that the World of Cinnabar is bananas. The game is completely over the top. It has this fever dream setting that's just a mishmash of comic books and video games and other RPGs and everything run through absolutely no filter and attached, unfortunately, to a system of such baroque complexity that there's no, like, you wouldn't actually want to play it. It's incredibly time-consuming. Which is a shame, because I think there's something to be said for the absolute goofiness of the World of Cinnabar. Now, I think that if you're playing for a long time in the World of Cinnabar, it might pale. Like, eventually, when everything is completely over the top, then nothing has any real impact, right? When all the world is just full-born late 80s, early 90s gonzo, then it's not as much fun. But if your characters were to temporarily find themselves in the World of Cinnabar, which, incidentally, is a giant spaceship made out of the planet Mars with a sort of fantasy society living on the inside of the hollowed-out planet and also a bunch of stuff going on the outside. I think if your characters found themselves there on some sort of interplanar jaunt or in a Spelljammer game, that would be a lot of fun. Or if one or two creatures from the World of Cinnabar made their way to another setting, it would be a fantastic contrast if you're in some world of, you know, dragons and chimeras and goblins or whatever and some Cinnabarian monster turned up. Anyway, I thought we would take a look at some of the creatures from Chapter 17, Monsters of the World of Cinnabar. And I thought we would begin just looking at some regular animals. We're going to look at a bear, we're going to look at a shark. I feel like those are pretty relatable points of comparison, right? No matter what role-playing game we find ourselves in, we always pretty much know what a bear is. Or do we? So let's, for instance, take a look at the bear, giant panda. Okay, that sounds like something that might be in the monster manual. Giant panda bears weigh 10 to 14 tons and stand 24 to 30 feet tall. They can sense auras and life forms within 1,000 feet. These creatures are very gentle and speak the human tongue, often providing help to adventurers. They have 300 psionic points and the ability Intellect Annihilation. Their most hated enemies are the Midnight Sunstone Grizzlies. Okay, so that's not really what I expected from the giant panda bear, which is just, so we're not forgetting, a real animal. But I think it's kind of delightful, right? That just sort of, you could have said, James, take a panda bear and make a thing out of it. And I don't think I would have come up with a 30-foot-tall, friendly, intellect-annihilating psychic. I might have made it friendly, because you just want to give one of them a cuddle. Let's look at another. This is probably the most evocative of the World of Cinnabar monster in the game. This is one of the grizzly bears, who are not under B for bear, but under G for grizzly. Don't ask me why. I'm speaking, of course, of the grizzly, giant flying, which is a real weenie compared to the giant panda. But they're nonetheless, the flying grizzlies are strong and ferocious creatures, 10 to 15 feet in length. They weigh 25 to 6,500 pounds and feed on any form of meat or fish. Their eye beams can be fired 10 times a day and take one attack to use. Their fur may be used as armor and is worth $1,000 for an intact hide. Flying grizzlies are very intelligent species who will stalk their prey vast distances. And right over above it is an illustration of two bears with giant wings coming out of their backs. And because this has clearly been copied from like an illustration of bears, the bears are just kind of placidly hanging out in the air. And then someone's added sort of floppy wings on their backs. There may be no creature more symbolic of the ethos of the world of Cinnabar than a grizzly bear with giant wings on its back that shoots eye lasers. Or at least, that's what I thought when I read about the grizzly, giant flying. And it's all like this. You know how D&D has a bunch of kind of like boring average monsters and then some real wild ones as standouts, you know, the raisins in your oatmeal? Raven C.S. McCracken is that game designer who looked at a chocolate chip cookie and said, well, the best part is the chocolate chips. Why would you eat a chocolate chip cookie when you could just pour a bag full of chocolate chips into your face? And I'm not gonna say that he doesn't have a point. But it's all like this. You want another monster? The fire hornet. The fire hornet shoots globs of glowing venomous goo at you, and when it gets to below half its life points, it explodes, sharing a 10-foot square area with 10,000 life point damage of radiation. I mean, that's not much. How about the giant mutant thunder lizard? Very strong and aggressive, generates electricity, breathes electricity. I mean, it's Godzilla. How about the Scarlet Grimraver? That's a 30th level demigod, a lord of nightmares on the psychic plane. His body emits a Vendorant Nalabarong engineered security spell for 100 feet, stopping teleports, tesseracts, unnatural vision, and any time or gravity control effect. They've got a load of engineered mutations, and 10 times a day they may phase tesseract or teleport 10,000 miles. They have 550 SMUs, whatever that means, 3,000 psionic points, and access to Vendorant Nalabarong Mage Warrior spells up to the 25th level, plus Mage Warrior Earth Parapsionic and Shaman spells, Alchemy Studies, Ninja Abilities, and 4 Engineering skills, just in case, you know, you need a bridge designed or something. All Scarlet Grimravers can cast an Area Effect God Power Curse in one attack 3 times a day. And it's all like this. Mutant Sand Mole, Armored Mantis, Heal Spring Melon. Is that a monster? Psysheen Mushroom. Psysheen mushrooms grow around the warm, moist ground of sunstone creatures' fresh dung. This fungus is found primarily in the mushroom spires. They glow slightly, making them easy to spot. If normal people eat one of these mushrooms, they will receive the psionic abilities telekinesis, telepathy, and clairvoyance for 1 hour. And if someone is foolish enough to eat another on the same day, he will go insane for 24 hours. Only Shadow Masters and people with psionic abilities can eat the mushrooms often without harm. Okay, actually, that's kind of fun. There's also a lot of these monsters. It talks about how they taste if you eat them. This seems to have been a thing in Raven C.S. McCracken's game. Giant sea otters, well known for their magnetic control abilities. The blood orange tree, the juice of the blood orange cannot be preserved in its original state, but it may be distilled by the high gnomes of the city magma located in the forest Soul Swallower. The cost is 1 orange given for 1 distilled, most common on the Enchanted Continent. The mutant octopus, which fires energy bolts. The talking raccoon, who is wearing a belt with a knife sheath, a pair of pirate boots, a wristwatch, and is carrying a bazooka. Oh, they're peaceful by nature, apparently, though, so who knows about that? The roar carp. No, okay. So here's the roar carp. It is not a carp, at least as far as I can tell. The roar carp is one of the most unusual creatures on Cinnabar. It is not one being, but two. The part known as the maw derives its title from its resemblance to a great mouth. The other part resembles dragon-like creatures with lime-green skin and dandelion-colored wings. The dragons are part of the maw, created as a means to gather food. The maw weighs 1 to 4 tons and is 15 feet tall, 20 feet wide, and 30 feet long. The dragons weigh 100 to 400 pounds and are 6 feet long. Each maw may have up to 5 dragons. The dragons eject from the maw at speeds of up to 200 miles per hour. Once in flight, they will hunt for larger creatures. Caught food is brought back to the maw and placed within the great mouth. This mouth has a specialized digestive soil within it that breaks down the food into absorbable substances. The maw is in constant telepathic link with its gatherers, and it can see and speak through them, and it tells you how long it takes the maw to break down the food that it ingests. It can telepathically dominate any other type of plant, including plant men. With this ability, the maw will usually have created a defensive perimeter. The dragons have 2 weapons. You got phase fire and your paralysis bolts. Every 2 years, it reproduces by creating a wee little dragon that goes off and plants another roar carp. And it can be domesticated if you catch it when it's first planted, when there's a long system to describe what happens. Okay, 2 things about the roar carp. When I was a kid, I played a lot of shoot-em-ups. And one of the things about shoot-em-ups is they often have really interesting graphic design, because the graphics don't matter. It doesn't matter whether you're playing a game where you're like a World War II fighter plane or a spaceship, or in the case of one of my favorites, in Sector X, you're a little flying hummingbird man. Right? It's not important. It doesn't matter. And a lot of them had these really strange creatures like this one. It's not just confined to shoot 'em ups. I've written on my blog about the game Rygar, which I was obsessed with when I was a kid, and it's enigmatic visual design. I feel like the roar carp is something like that. So it's a giant mouth in the ground, and it spits out dragons, and the dragons get food for it, but it's actually a plant, and it can control other plants. That's actually kind of a great monster. It's a very good, like, oh, another dimension is breaking into our dimension, and things that don't follow the rules of normal reality are setting up here, that still has fun tactical elements to engage with, rather than just being, you know, an exercise in surrealist imagery. It's genuinely a good monster, and I would never have designed something like it in a million years, because if I wanted to have a big central hub that sent out little monsters to gather food for it, I would have made the crucial mistake of having a relationship between the monsters that are sent out and the big central hub that made some kind of sense. Legitimately a good monster for putting into your games. It's got all the grab and digest stuff that you'd like from a good Gygax monster, but it's obviously not just a big Pinocchio whale. It's clearly something from another reality. The reality inside Raven C.S. McCracken's head. This is not a good game by any stretch of the definition, but there are moments in Cinnabar, particularly in its world design, where the sheer wild freewheeling creativity is not the right word because it's incredibly derivative, but the sheer wild freewheeling bricolage of it gives it a sense of transcendent weirdness that I think is very hard to capture if you're trying to achieve it. And while I'm going to make fun of the flying grizzly bears with the laser eyes, I know it's juvenile to make fun of bad games. Nothing's easier than poking fun at bad movies. I like to poke fun at bad movies, but I also like to enjoy them for what's good about them. The best bad movies have a sense of commitment to their idiotic premises, or no one's watching, so let's just do whatever the heck we feel like wildness that can't be found in the more polished product of a big studio. And that's a little bit like how I feel about the world of Cinnabar. It could never have been made by someone who knew what they were doing. But people who knew what they were doing have, I mean, they produced some classic games, but also produced a lot of forgettable, more or less the same games. And certainly in terms of monsters, they've created a lot of forgettable, more or less the same monsters. So even though the monsters in Raven C.S. McCracken's magnum opus are silly, and even though the game system is an insomnia cure, maybe I've just been warped by long exposure to this thing. But honestly, I'm going to say a certain goofy charm again, am I? Honestly, I think there's some value to some of these. I haven't even got to the sharks. Like, the nurse shark has healing powers. I was going to say that sounds like something an 8-year-old would have made up, but no 8-year-old in the world knows that little about sharks. But there's kind of something to be said for the idea of giving all the creatures in your setting the powers that would be implied by their names. So anyway, that's the first look at monsters from the world of Cinnabar. I'm going to kind of dip in and out of other games and other, you know, sources of monsters for these little bonus content episodes. I want to give something to my Patreon subscribers at all levels, but I also don't want to force myself to stick to a schedule or a set of rules, so I'm kind of just going to drop whatever whenever I feel like it. I think that's the easiest way to motivate myself to do them. But I hope you enjoyed it, and, you know, if you have experience of the world of Cinnabar, I'm super eager to talk about it. It's such a fun and silly thing, and I'm so fascinated by it, even though it is, by almost any objective standard, dreadful. So it only remains for me to say thank you so much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon. Your support, expressed through your hard-earned money, means a lot to me. I'm really glad that you've been enjoying the show so much that you wanted to contribute to it. So thank you once again for listening and for supporting Monster Man, and join me next time as we talk about more monsters from the world of Cinnabar, unless it occurs to me to talk about something else, in which case we'll be talking about that. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.